The big question in business, can we do anything about rising food and commodities prices?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The big question in a moment. First, word this morning from the Labor Department that the number of people filing for first-time jobless benefits rose unexpectedly last week by 35,000. Also, wholesale prices were up in December, helped along by rising energy costs. And prices for basic farm commodities have also been on the rise big time lately. In the last 7 months, contracts for future deliveries of wheat and corn have almost doubled. Corn and soybean prices jumped 4% alone yesterday. Marketplace's Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale is with us live this morning with the latest. Morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
So why are all these prices going up?
Well, yesterday's jump was due to a new prediction from the Agriculture Department that we're going to see smaller harvest this year. And that's due to a bunch of bad weather in places like Australia and India and South America. But there's also rising demand for food globally, especially in developing countries. And as diets improve, it actually makes farming more inefficient, says Duncan Green with Oxfam in London.
Mass meat consumption is a very inefficient use of a limited amount of land. You know, you need six times more land to produce a kilogram of beef than a kilogram of cereals. We may well see a situation where we need to actually somehow control the amount of meat consumed.
That's longer period, but what about in the shorter term, John? Is there any way to avoid disruption in these high prices?
Well, one way is to tamp down on investor speculation, which could be fueling these price spikes. This morning, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission here in D.C. is going to take up new rules for investors that are designed to prevent investors from puffing up agriculture prices even more.
Marketplace's John Dimsdale in Washington. John, thanks.
Thanks.
The nation's trade deficit edged down in November to its lowest point in 10 months. That's thanks to a rise in U.S. exports. President Obama has said he wants to double exports over the next 5 years. And today, the U.S. Export and Import Bank announces a new focus on small business. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
In the 1960s, Creative Teaching Press started making scratch-and-sniff stickers that teachers put on homework. Today, it sells millions of workbooks, flashcards, and other teacher tools. Its fastest-growing market is overseas.
Sales for last year, 2010, were up 52%.
Susan Munoz handles accounts. She says Asia and the Middle East are big potential markets, but small businesses like hers can be more vulnerable overseas.
You never know what the economic weather is going to be or what's happening within those countries that might limit us from collecting.
That's where the U.S. Export-Import Bank comes in. The bank helps guarantee that foreign customers can and will pay American companies. Bank Chairman Fred Hochberg says the agency is expanding these services.
Remember, 95% of the world's customers are overseas. They're not here.
Hochberg aims to help small business owners understand that and act on it. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are mostly mixed right now. The European Central Bank today left its interest rates alone, steady at 1%. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow climbed 83 points to close at 11,755.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Yellow Book 360, offering a spectrum of marketing tools for small businesses designed to go beyond yellow. More at yellowbook360.com. By the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at chevyvolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric. And by Constant Contact Event Marketing, working to help small businesses and nonprofits make their events easier with event registration and marketing tools. ConstantContact.com.
The number of homes seized by banks topped a million last year, according to real estate data firm Realty Track. More foreclosures means less stability in the housing market. Marketplace worked with Los Angeles public TV station KCET and its show SoCal Connected to tell the story of a single home and that home's place in the American economy. Marketplace host Kai Rizdahl gives us a sneak peek inside Lot 354.
If you've been listening to this program over the past couple of years, you're familiar with our coverage of the housing market, the extreme highs and the lows, terms that have probably become part of your regular vocabulary, like subprime loans, adjustable rate mortgages, short sales, loan modifications. But I want you to forget all that and remember what used to drive residential real estate in this country. A house, a tangible bit of real property that's yours.
So, Kai, this is the house.
Eric and Allison Feinberg moved in just before Thanksgiving last year. It's their first home.
So when you came in here the first time, though, obviously it didn't look like this, right? Describe it for me.
No, so this was all bricks.
The fireplace.
The fireplace, and it was not very pretty. And
yeah, there was a hulking mass of bricks there.
Right, literally as you walk in the door.
Yeah, and so one guy had a suggestion. Maybe we just mortar it over, and it'll kind of mute itself into the wall.
It's a 1927 Spanish bungalow, about 1,800 square feet, three bedrooms, three baths. Eric and Allison saved their money, biding their time until 4 years after they got married, they found this house. It's tract number 7603 in the county map books, lot 354 on Point View Street in Los Angeles. The Feinbergs are the third couple to own lot 354 in the past 8 years. They're the last link in a chain of transactions that helped tell the story of the rise and the fall of the American housing market. There were the former owners, the ones with perfect timing, the ones who saw the house triple in value during the 4 years they owned it.
It's probably ridiculous that the price that we did sell it for in hindsight, but at the time, you know, it was like, hey, we did all this work, and, you know, we loved the house. I mean, we weren't doing the work to flip it at the time we did it.
There were the real estate agents who were swamped with eager buyers, buyers who knew they could get an easy loan with almost no proof of income.
You just put a number on the application. It could be your brother or your mother, and they call and said, hey, do you work there? And that was it.
And there were the banks, swimming with money, pushing loans out to get more people into more houses.
To hear the full story of Lot 354, check out the Marketplace later today. And finally, ad data firm Ace Metrics researched national TV commercials, found the ones with celebrity endorsements were among the least effective among consumers. Their worst celebrity endorsement, they say? Tiger Woods spot for Nike. No one saw that coming. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
It used to be easy to buy a house in this country. Way too easy. No money down, no income verification.
Nobody forces me to buy a Ferrari. I can't afford it. If you lower the bar at the Ferrari dealership to the point where I qualify, look out.
I'm Kai Rizdal, a look back and a look forward at the American housing market, a co-production with Los Angeles public television station KCET. That's next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.